Ever get that feeling that, there are things happening behind the scenes shaping your town?
Definitely. Like how new buildings go up or who gets elected.
Yeah, exactly. And today we're digging into that, especially here in Connecticut, looking closely at Fairfield and Bridgeport.
We've got a really interesting mix of sources, articles, documents, reports on election reform, town planning stuff from Fairfield, their POCD.
Right, the plan of conservation and development.
Yeah, that. And then there's some ethical questions swirling around Bridgeport politics.
And a proposed state law, too, right? About development near train stations.
That's the one, the Transit-Oriented Development Bill, or TOD. Lots to unpack there.
Okay, so our mission today, listener, is to connect these pieces. We'll pull out the key insights, see how local stuff in Fairfield and Bridgeport links to, bigger statewide trends.
And really explore what it all means for residents, for democracy locally.
All right, let's jump in. Where should we start? Maybe with the elections. That feels pretty fundamental.
Good starting point, because a big theme that pops up right away is, well, concerned about how fair and accessible our elections really are in Connecticut. One source gives a firsthand account from a non-affiliated candidate, someone, Democrat or Republican.
An independent.
Right, running in a recent special election in Fairfield County. And it sounds like it was incredibly difficult just getting on the ballot.
Yeah, I can imagine. It really does seem like the system is set up for the two big parties, doesn't it?
It certainly looks that way.
Yeah.
This candidate faced a real uphill battle collecting signatures.
What was so hard about it?
Well, it's still pen and ink,
Yeah.
no online option.
Right.
You need voters' personal details, and the time frame, especially for a special election, is really compressed.
So it almost acts like a barrier, stopping people outside the main parties from even getting a shot.
That's the argument being made, yeah. It effectively defaults to a two-party race most of the time. A key takeaway is just how tough it is to break in as an independent here.
Okay, so that's the independents. What about how the parties themselves choose candidates? Any issues there?
Well, the sources raise some questions there too. For instance, the GOP convention hosted by Mario Testa in Bridgeport. There were apparently questions about who was actually voting there specifically. Were people from outside the county participating? And just a general feeling of a lack of transparency.
Interesting. And the Democrats.
They use what's called a town meeting. Sounds very grassroots, right?
Yeah, it does.
But the concern highlighted is whether it's genuinely open or if it's more about rubber stamping a pre-selected candidate. In this case, it seems a staffer from the party leadership was chosen.
So, potentially not as open as the name suggests.
Potentially. And here's a weird little detail, but maybe significant. The forms used in both the GOP convention and the Dem town meeting didn't have a line for print name.
Just a signature line.
Seems so,
Yeah.
which makes it hard to verify who actually signed, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Accountability.
Exactly. And this same issue, no print name field, has apparently shown up on some of Mayor Joe Ganim's past filings as well.
So it points to maybe some systemic sloppiness or maybe something more deliberate.
Hard to say for sure, but it definitely undermines transparency.
So what are the sources suggesting? What's the fix?
Well, there's a clear call for electoral reform, more transparency, obviously, looking at things like ranked choice voting to give people more real choices. And maybe even setting up a truly independent state elections division to oversee everything, separate from political influence.
Okay, so that's the election process itself. Now, you mentioned Bridgeport and Mayor Ganim. Let's shift there.
Right, Bridgeport. It's heavily Democratic and, well, it has a history of election controversies, it's fair to say.
That's true.
And the sources bring up some ongoing questions. One area is Mayor Ganim's residency.
This keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What are the specifics this time?
Questions around the purchase of 37 Thorn Place, apparently bought below market value, got a tax cut the same year, and also the inclusion of the next door lot, 57 Thorn Place. Some paperwork that raises eyebrows.
And are there other documentation issues?
Yeah, the sources point to inconsistencies in some official filings, incorrect addresses listed, sometimes a P.O. box in Woodbridge used for the campaign.
A P.O. box for a campaign HQ.
That's what's alleged. And the concerning part for many is what they see as a lack of serious action from the State Elections Enforcement Commission, the SEC.
Right, the SEC. Given the history you mentioned, why do you think that is? The sources suggest anything. Lack of teeth, politics.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The sources mention a previous long investigation into Ganim that kind of fizzled out, ended with what's described as a pretty small, almost token penalty, no real guardrails put in place for the future.
So it creates this perception, maybe, that the oversight isn't as robust as it should be.
That's certainly the concern raised. And it extends to campaign finances, too. The people involved. The sources name LaPere as treasurer, and then Paoletto as deputy treasurer. And LaPere has this quite troubled past involving alleged financial exploitation linked to a marriage.
Wow. Okay. That definitely adds another layer of concern about who's handling the money.
It does. And there are even questions about the signing dates on some of Ghanem's documents, whether they might have been changed after the fact.
Really?
Yeah, at a suggestion to scrutinize bank records at a specific M&T bank branch near Ghanem's and Mario Testa's financial interests.
Okay, so connecting the dots here. How does this political control on these questions potentially link to, say, city projects or funding?
Well, the sources suggest a possible connection between this strong political control in Bridgeport and the approval of large construction projects, especially schools, often funded by state money.
Right.
And there's a question raised about whether all these projects are truly needed or if the oversight is sufficient. Harding High School is used as an example.
What about Harding?
It's apparently sitting vacant now, despite costing a lot. So it raises questions about the planning and the flow of state funds, maybe favoring certain Hartford-based contractors.
So the takeaway is that unchallenged political power might influence how major resources are allocated, possibly without enough scrutiny.
That's the implication, yeah. It's about accountability for those big decisions.
All right, let's pivot now. Let's talk Fairfield and its planning the POCD you mentioned earlier.
Okay. Fairfield. What's interesting is how Fairfield sees itself. The sources really stress this.
How's that?
They see themselves as a large town made up of distinct neighborhoods, like villages almost, not as a city.
And why is that distinction important?
Because it pushes back against maybe a state-level preference for more density, more urban-style development, which we'll get to with the TOD bill. Fairfield wants to maintain its town character.
Gotcha. And there's a history to their planning documents.
Yeah, quite a fascinating one. They have these older plans written in-house between the 40s and late 70s. And those plans apparently really focused on conservation, warning against letting builders drive too much development.
Wow, that's a different emphasis than you might expect today.
Exactly. It contrasts sharply with the more recent POCDs from 2016 and the current one being developed, which were written by outside consultants or vendors.
And the perception is that these newer vendor-written plans are more builder-friendly.
That's the concern expressed in some of the source material, yes. They question why the shift happened. Maybe complexity, needing outside expertise.
Could be.
But even though there's been community input in the current process, there are still worries about the consultant's draft.
What are the key things Fairfield is trying to address in its plan?
Several big areas. Preserving neighborhood character, they talk about the Seven Hills of Fairfield.
Okay.
Transportation is huge, especially Route 1. It connects things, but also divides the town.
Mm-hmm.
Housing, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
A desire for more owner-occupied homes, maybe fewer rentals.
Yeah.
Protecting environmental assets, wetlands, and also environmental justice issues. They bring up the Ash Creek transformer situation in Bridgeport as a sort of cautionary tale.
That makes sense. Anything else? Finances?
Yeah, there's a call to audit the assessor's office. Concerns about property assessments maybe not being accurate, potentially even fraud.
Okay. And looking forward, what kind of projects are envisioned?
Some specific ideas for places like Ash Creek, thinking about a bridge, maybe involving Yukon Fairfield, Pine Creek, making it more navigable, adding trails,
mm-hmm.
Mill River and Fairfield Park area recreation, maybe even a tunnel under the tracks. And this interesting idea of agrivoltaics.
Now, there's what?
Agrivoltaics, combining solar panels with agriculture on the same land. Pretty innovative.
Huh, interesting.
There's also this push in Fairfield to bring back independent town services, make things more transparent, get more info online.
Seems like a theme, transparency.
It really is. And ethical hiring, trying to keep the knowledge of experienced staff when they leave. They even floated an idea for a second chance program.
What's that?
Like for people who've broken laws, maybe require ethics courses, community service, that kind of thing.
Okay. So underlying a lot of this Fairfield stuff is what? A desire for local control?
Very much so. Protecting their environment, protecting their town character, and this feeling of Fairfield makes Hartford takes a resistance to too much regional or state control.
Which perfectly sets up our next topic, that state transit-oriented development bill, the TOD bill.
Exactly. Because this bill seems to embody that tension between state goals and local control.
So what are the main arguments against this bill that are coming up in the sources?
The core concern is that it essentially overrides local zoning power in these designated TOD areas near transit.
Taking power away from the towns.
That's the fear. Over things like building height, density, how many homes per acre setbacks, even parking rules.
And the worry is this leads to
unfunded mandates, basically. Strain on local infrastructure, sewers, water, schools that the town has to pay for, plus potential environmental damage from denser development approved with less local input.
Okay, now you mentioned as-of-right development. That sounds important. What does it mean in this context?
It's crucial. As-of-right means if a developer's plan meets the criteria set by the state in the bill, the town basically has to approve it. No local public hearings, no discretionary review by local boards.
Wow. So significantly less local, say.
That's the heart of the opposition. The bill apparently allows, as of right, up to 9 market rate units near transit with no local review and no affordability requirement.
9 units, just like that.
Seems so. And it also makes all 830-gram affordable housing projects within TOD areas as of right.
What's 830-gram again?
That's the state's affordable housing statute, which already limits local control somewhat. This would remove even more local checks, potentially on things like health and safety impacts.
Okay.
Even developments that are 100% affordable would be as of right under this proposal.
And the infrastructure point. Does the bill address whether towns can actually handle this new development?
Critics say no, not adequately. It doesn't really force consideration of whether the existing water lines, sewer systems, roads, schools can support the added density.
Who gets to set the actual rules then, if not the towns?
This is another major sticking point. The bill gives significant power to the state's Secretary of OPM or their designee.
OPM, Office of Policy and Management.
That's the one. They, or someone they appoint, would essentially dictate the zoning guidelines, density, height, etc., for all these TOD areas across the state.
So a one-size-fits-all approach dictated from Hartford.
That's the criticism. It limits local tailoring to specific town contexts and could eliminate public hearings on these projects.
And is there leverage to make towns comply?
Yes. There's language suggesting towns might have to return state funding if they don't adopt these state-mandated guidelines.
That's a strong incentive.
Definitely. Plus, there's concern about vagueness, like what's a reasonable size for a TOD zone? The bill isn't clear.
And the worry is the OPM secretary, or maybe a consultant they hire, gets to decide that unilaterally.
Precisely. And decide how dense is dense enough.
What about environmental protections? You mentioned wetlands earlier.
The bill apparently gives local wetlands agencies only limited input, and it doesn't seem to offer broad protection for all natural resources, just specifically designated wetlands. So other sensitive areas might be vulnerable.
Okay. So pulling all these threads together now, election concerns, Bridgeport governance, Fairfield's planning, this TOD bill, how do they connect?
They're deeply interconnected, really. Who gets elected and how fair that process is determines who makes the decisions about development plans like Fairfield's POCD.
Right.
And state-level policies like the TOD bill can then directly override or conflict with those local plans and priorities.
Creating that tension, we talked about local control versus state mandates, especially around zoning, affordable housing.
Exactly. And that theme of transparency or the lack of it runs through everything. Election forms, Bridgeport finances, the details of the TOD bill, making sure town plans are accessible. It all comes back to accountability.
Yep.
And underneath it all is that constant push and pull between development interest and residents wanting to preserve their community's character and environment.
So if we boil it down for the listener, what we've looked at today shows real worries about election fairness, serious ethical questions in Bridgeport's government.
Fairfield trying to chart its own course on development, maybe clashing with state goals.
And this proposed TOD bill that could really reshape local control over development near transit statewide.
Yeah, the big aha moment is seeing how these aren't separate silos. Election integrity affects development decisions. State laws impact local planning. It's all linked.
Okay, so let's leave our listener with a final thought, something to chew on.
Right.
What is the right balance between, you know, state guidance or even mandates and letting towns like Fairfield or Bridgeport truly shape their own future? How much local autonomy is essential?
And maybe how can individuals, just regular residents, actually make their voices heard effectively when you've got these powerful political forces and development pressures at play?
It really underscores the need to stay informed, doesn't it? And to participate. Because these decisions have real consequences for everyone's community.